This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the December 18th, 2025 meeting with the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also being made available telephonically for access by the public. Terry Lehane, Rhode Island Housing Director of IT, will now provide information on this.
Good morning. This is Terry Lehane, Director of IT at Rhode Island Housing. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, your telephones will be muted. To unmute, press *6. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-429-1427.
Thank you, Terry. Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information and documents for each of the actions being taken. If the teleconference portion of the meeting is interrupted, we will stop the meeting and attempt to restore the audio. Chair Deborah Goddard will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners, staff, and guests, please state your name prior to speaking each and every time for the benefit of our speaker and listening in by teleconference. I will turn it over to the chair to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Good morning, all. Carol, do you want to do roll?
Certainly. Commissioner Goddard.
Here.
Commissioner Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Weber.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Craven.
Here.
Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the approval of the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meeting November 20th, 2025. Motion. Second.
Kevin, second.
Any comments, corrections? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
That was unanimous. Good morning, all. I'm just going to be here this morning during a tough time. Just wishing everyone safety, the joy to find in the holiday season. I'll turn it over to Carol.
Thank you. Our single-family lending reported slightly more than 1,300 closings on over 520 8 million volume year-to-date end of November is down 6.4%, but our registrations are at a record high for the month of November, which is terrific. The downside, we continue to monitor delinquency in the portfolio. We have over 2,100 delinquent loans, a rate of 14.8% for the portfolio. Similarly, for our 90-day plus category, delinquent loans increased by 125. Our RFP for multiple funding resources for our multifamily closed today. So far to date, we have, 50 plus applications?
50 ETF, yep.
So lots of work ahead for Housing Department in Rhode Island getting projects funded and closed. A couple of events in December, construction start at Center City in East Providence, and the opening of Longfield Memorial Law in Lincoln. Collectively, the developers will provide 124 apartments. Congratulations to the treasurer and the team for the launch of the Rhode Island Anchor Home Program in partnership with Rhode Island lending institutions. The goal to increase homeownership opportunities, another tool in the toolkit for Rhode Islanders to buy their first home. Great news from Chris's area. The ERA 2 money, all but $55,000, deployed and spent, which is terrific. It went into lots of deals and big win for the state for millions of dollars. I don't know if I've spoken, I believe I've spoken with the chair, but I don't know if I've raised it for the board about the lead grant and the wind down of the targeted lead grant that we have. Notice was given earlier this month to employees in the lead department about staff reduction. Our 2019 lead grant expires December 31st. We get about 3 months to close it out, and we know that during that closeout period, we won't need the staffing levels that we have now. So we wanted to give them advance notice. We will move toward a smaller program supported by state funds and our resources during that closeout period in order to continue with some of the work that we have in the pipeline on positive no, we have received word that we were awarded a $7.7 million statewide flood grant. Challenge is that grant will not be up and running for several months. We have environmental review that we have to conduct and other planning documents that we have to prepare for the grant, so we do expect that staff will provide severance to staff and outplacement services so that they're assisted in new positions. And that's my report, Chair.
Thank you, Carol. Carol, just on home ownership, this is a trend, it's not a good trend we're seeing. I'm wondering if what we are doing, what we should be doing, on that.
Yeah, we yesterday Leslie started pulling together data on our portfolio in order for us to take a deep dive and have a more thorough discussion mm-hmm. about what's happening both on and when people are applying for loans and what's happening as they're trying to pay. Leslie, do you want to chat a little bit?
Yeah, just to mention, fortunately, that delinquency is the highest. The rate we have for November month end is the highest we've seen. December of 2020 in terms of the number of delinquent loans. And obviously in 2020, the impact was really COVID-related. A couple of months ago, I think I mentioned that FHA is looking for significant changes to its loss mitigation policies. And I think this recent increase, this spike up, is a result of those loss mitigation changes. So FHA is now reverting back to pre-COVID guidelines. Where if a borrower wants loss mitigation, they have to show evidence that they can afford mm-hmm. their modified payment. That's called a trial payment plan. So most borrowers came in requesting those trial payments in October, it began in November. So what that's doing is that's keeping that borrower in that seriously delinquent category for an additional 3 to 4 months. Previously, a borrower would request loss mitigation. We could make those changes effective immediately and reinstate that loan. So we were starting to see some reductions in the 90-plus day delinquency category. This actually is going to reverse that trend. So what we're looking at is we don't anticipate any improvements until March as people come out of those trial payment plans and actually go into reinstate So that's one factor. The other factor is, as part of those changes, we now have to do a more intensive consultation with the borrower, actually reviewing all of the various options they may be eligible for. And what we are seeing as a result of that is we're seeing a significant increase in the requests of borrowers who are seeking more mitigation. So we've actually seen 699 borrowers request loss mitigation from the inception since October 1st, since the new program.
Can I interrupt you for a minute, yes. Commissioner Goddard? My brain isn't catching that, the logic. Intensive consultation and more people seeking it.
Because we're getting into more details about what they what they may be eligible for, and I think more of that information, they're saying, oh, I may be eligible for what? I may be eligible for forbearance. I may be eligible for an FHA partial claim. I may be eligible for a loan modification. So that, you know, I think that additional discussion, more in-depth discussion with the borrower, is actually meeting that borrower to say, yes, I do interest in that.
Okay, they're not in your account until after that conversation. Gotcha. I'm still concerned about the trend about numbers coming to the door and maybe having problems. And maybe there's some lessons learned as we start about to launch our home ownership program next month. Maybe there's some lessons learned, and so maybe Peter or Sarah could be part of the conversation.
Absolutely. Yep.
Terrific.
Yep. You've got to shrink down. Leslie gave me reams of paper, and we've got to shrink it down into something that we can understand and really get our hands on what the drivers are, either at the beginning, at the underwriting process, or what's happening as they go through. But I think Leslie's right. When people know that there's an opportunity for them to help them, they're going to reach out and try to take that opportunity. And you can't blame them.
Yep. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Approval of the amendments to the charitable and civic donations policy. James.
Good morning. This is James Comer. This request is for an approval to the charitable and civic donations policy, which was adopted in November of 2015. Under that policy, the executive director is empowered to approve Individual expenditures of less than $100 per admission, provided the aggregate expenditures do not exceed $2,000 a month. In recognition of the fact that everything costs more these days, we are requesting an increase in the per ticket cap to $250 and the monthly aggregate to $3,000 that would be for the executive director to approve without bringing it to the board. We will continue to bring, as you'll see in a moment, these charitable donations for overall approval, but the executive director can approve them on a going forward basis.
Do you have a motion?
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion, questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
That is unanimous. Approval of external charitable donations and contributions, retroactive and ongoing.
Thank you.
Can I just jump in?
Oh, you certainly may.
In the past, we've brought these on a monthly basis. Somewhere along the line, in the midst of state fiscal recovery funding and ERA and everything, we neglected to come to the board monthly or when we had monthly expenditures. So we're playing catch-up here. So you'll see expenses going back to January on this report.
Appreciate that note, Carol.
So this is for approval of external charitable donations and contributions, both retroactive and ongoing. As Carol mentioned, this encompasses some expenditures that we've made over the past calendar year, all for events with our partners. There are six events that are covered by this, with two with the Rhode Island Mortgage Bankers Association, two with Crossroads, one with Foster Forward, and one with the Housing Network of Rhode Island. In total, they represent $1,670.91 in expenditures for partner events that we've attended, and requesting approval.
So moved. Kevin Moore.
Seconded, Rob.
Any comments, questions?
Yes. Just one briefly, Jim. It seems like in the resolution, you
still have to... Okay. I'm sorry about that, Rob. You did point it out at management committee, and we just needed to make that change. Okay. Oh, so you know what? The one I'm looking at that's on the website has the 1670, so maybe it's just in board docs. The board docs didn't get updated. We did update the one on publicly available.
Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Approval of the FY26 Michael S. Van Leesten Memorial Awards Program funding.
Yet again, me. This request for action is for approval to fund the FY26 Michael S. Van Leesten Memorial Awards Program. This is a program that honors the life and work of Michael Van Leesten, a lifelong Providence resident. He was dedicated to improving the lives of Rhode Islanders through his leadership in business, civil rights, activism, and public service. In addition to being a former chair of the Rhode Island Housing Board, he was the founder and executive director of the Opportunities Industrialization Center of Rhode Island, and also served in leadership positions with the NAACP, Urban League, and Black Heritage Society. We fund two $5,000 scholarships for students at Rhode Island College, pursuing an academic degree related to the housing field. We've done this for 4 years in partnership with RIC. It's been great. I've had the opportunity to go to some of the ceremonies where the students get the scholarship, and it's fantastic. A number of the kids have been the first student in their family to go to college, just really good, a good use of funds. So it's two $5,000 scholarships totaling $10,000 plus a 5% gift fee, which is required per Rhode Island College's policy. So the total approval would be $10,500 for these scholarships.
So moved, Rob.
Second, Rebecca.
Any comments or questions? None. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Approval of the engagement of a consultant to conduct a lean process improvement for the design and construction department.
Thank you. This is James Comer again. This request for action is for approval to engage Turner and Townsend to conduct a lean process improvement for design and construction team in our development group to evaluate that team's work and identify areas where we could get a little bit more efficient. As I said at the management committee, I just want to be clear, this is not as a result of something that we find to be going wrong. It's something that's part of our ongoing effort to get better at what we do and streamline the process, not only for us, but for our partners as well. And I think it'll be certainly something insightful. And it's also part of the executive director's stated goals for this year, as the board has asked. So we have, which is a little bit different than some of our RFA partners. A very robust design and construction team. I think, you know, we're very proud of the things we've built over the years that we funded because of that group and the work that they've done to make sure it's being built appropriately and with an eye on the budget. That said, we can always look to get better. In this engagement, we try to understand and assess how our D&C group can meet the needs of developers, contractors, architects, and other involved partners, and hopefully make it easier to create and preserve affordable housing and hopefully quicker as well. We will assess cost containment, our guidelines and requirements, ways to improve our approach, what processes may slow down design and construction, and if there are any roadblocks that are holding us back from being more efficient. Final product will be a report summarizing these findings and providing recommendations for how to improve moving forward. We issued an RFP in October of this year to an established roster of lean process consultants that's been pre-approved by the board. We received three proposals. The selection committee reviewed these proposals and scored them, and Turner & Townsend's proposal was responsive to all the elements and the highest scoring. So they anticipate taking 9 weeks to do this, and the total cost not to exceed $109,625. Happy to answer any questions.
Motion?
So moved. Rebecca?
Seconded, Rob.
Well, you know, I think this is really important. Glad to see it moving forward. I've looked at the scope. I think it's fulsome. And I think having a third party is always a good way to get input from our partners who may be a little hesitant sometimes to offer criticism or
something. That is not my experience.
Anyway, I think this is worthwhile, so thank you for
We will be engaging with the board, so we'll be reaching out, speaking with board members at the same time happening. Brett is doing a study on what fire code is doing to the cost of construction for us, and also what might do to the cost of construction for our projects moving forward. There's a lot of bills that have been floating around about accessibility, so we're evaluating that at the same time we're moving this forward.
Sure. Other comments or questions?
Just want to add to you. So when I hear lean, I think of kind of a very much internal process and looking at, you know, our procedures and processes and how we more efficiently do something. But I think that obviously this is an activity where we're very much engaging with our partners. Mm-hmm. So is there going to be
yes
the eyes there as well? And
yeah, the intent is to have a couple of cohorts of focus groups that comprise our partners across the spectrum. So there'll be some board members, some of our partners in state government, architects, engineers, contractors, all the folks who interact with design and construction, developers certainly, and consultants that will be able to weigh in on this and, you know, inform the final product. So they were all, you know, meeting with our D&C staff and our development group as well, but it absolutely will involve a lot of input from the outside world.
Other questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
That was unanimous. Approval of the surplus property land bank title. Ben?
Good morning. This is Ben Frost speaking. In its 2025 session, the General Assembly created a housing land bank program in Rhode Island Housing, the principal purpose of which was to allow us to directly acquire from state agencies surplus data, but more expansively allows us to acquire by purchase, donation, or transfer property from state agencies, municipalities, and nonprofit organizations, and by donation from for-profit organizations. The properties will be held by the Rhode Island Housing Development Corporation in Rhode Island Housing's name, and we plan to issue RFPs once acquired, require properties, issue an RFP for developers to submit their proposals for us for affordable and mixed income housing. We'll have a committee that will review these proposals and make recommendations. And the initial allocation will be, funds will be up to $5 million from the source yet to be identified. Any acquisition over $1 million would require approval of the Board of Commissioners. The memo states that it's by the Rhode Island Housing Development Corporation Board of Directors. That's not correct. The Board of Commissioners, the resolution and the guidelines are correct. If we were to sell properties, then all the proceeds would revolve back into the fund. Happy to take any questions.
Motion?
So moved, Rebecca.
Seconded, Rob.
Questions or comments?
This is Rebecca. I would just like to say the Department of Administration worked closely with Rhode Island Housing and also the Executive Office of Housing to find a way to enhance what Carol explained to us already at Rhode Island Housing. I'm really happy to see the application of up to $5 million to resource the properties. When the state does have land to surplus, now Rhode Island Housing can consider one of the agencies who could be receptive to conveyance, and that comes at no cost. So I'm really hopeful that we'll find opportunities to work together in that way.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the hard work you all did on this.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Kevin. Deborah, thank you. I think this is a great vehicle to source surplus land and put it towards housing. I'm concerned about the fact that we're contributing $5 million. I know it's up to $5 million, but out of our operating budget, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's a really big chunk of our annual net revenues. And again, it's kind of another instance of a bit of a piecemeal approach to how we're allocating our annual net revenues. I'd really like to have, this is our a discussion, this is our projected net revenues, these are our priorities, and this is how we want to fund them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also, at its best, I think this could be a fantastic program. If we can get sites that are very suitable for housing at a below market rate price, that's great. But we certainly don't want this to turn into some kind of transfer program for other state agencies and us be on the hook for it.
Agreed.
I think fortunately we were very conscientious to acknowledge that Rhode Island Housing does have the ability to decline. They have to affirmatively opt in receipt of the transfer.
Okay.
Otherwise the state agencies would surplus the property.
I think we're all aware of that caution, and some are more nervous about it than others, but it is an opportunity. It's a great opportunity.
And one actually we've had in the past. Right? The Frenchtown Road property was a DOT property.
Right. I'm saying it can.
Yeah.
It can be fantastic.
Yep, but I hear you. And pressure can sometimes be brought on
right.
the agency.
Right.
Yes.
We don't want to buy something that's not suitable for housing.
Exactly.
Have it sit there for a while. And
yep.
ultimately,
we already have that. We don't need any more of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Got it.
Other comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
That was unanimous. Firm approval of financing for Sweet Briar in Barrington.
Good morning. This is Melanie Brewer. This request for action is for the firm approval of Rhode Island Housing Tax Exempt Construction, an amount not to exceed $7.4 million, of which $2,426,500 will remain as a tax-exempt permanent first mortgage for Sweetbriar. Due to the project's progress, development division staff is requesting that the Board of Commissioners provide firm approval for this financing rather than preliminary approval. This is a 4% tax-exempt preservation transaction. It's located in Barrington. It was actually the first affordable family development there. The developer is East Bay CDC. Frank Spinella, the consultant, is here today in support of it. This is currently in our portfolio. It was built originally in 2009. It's designed as a traditional neighborhood development. It fits within Barrington's architecture. 47 units, has 10 project-based vouchers. The unit mix is 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, anywhere between 50 and 60% AMI. And it has a 98% occupancy rate. So the investor on this is Santander Bank through Redstone Equity Partners. The pricing right now holding for them closing this month is at 92 cents per credit, which is high. And they're receiving about 15% equity at closing. The kind of current financing is about $6.6 million in existing debt on the development. There is a Rhode Island Housing first mortgage, which will be paid off at closing. Rhode Island Housing targeted loan, which is going to roll over. Rhode Island Housing home investment partnership loan, that'll also roll over. And then there is Homes Rhode Island BHRI loan. A portion of that will be rolling over, as well as a portion of the sponsor loan. This has slightly changed since what we originally submitted at credit, so I'll walk through that here in a minute. We had some good news that came back, though, on Friday, so. The proposed financing, once the debt is rolled over, is going to have the tax-exempt permanent loan, the preservation loan, a sponsor loan, and the existing reserves. So since credit, We actually were able to go back. We've been working with the appraiser to get the appraisal increased, found a calculation error along with having them take a look at it. So from about 4.1, 4.2 million up to 5.1 million. With that increase in appraised value, the acquisition costs were then allowed to increase, increasing eligible basis, and then your tax credits increased. And tax credit equity into the deal. So with that, the rollover debt increased, right? Because we had to reduce our first mortgage to meet our debt service coverage ratio. So we actually took our first loan down, increased the rollover debt, putting back in a portion of the BHRI and a portion of the sponsor loan as rollover debt to balance the sources and uses. So our loan decreased from about 2.6 to about 2.4 million, still meeting our underwriting requirements. And in addition, while we were doing all this on Friday with the appraised amount, we went ahead and got an updated rate quote on Monday. So that was Monday's current rate quote went from 6.5% down to 6.25%. And then we also went through and, you know, checked all the other sources because we were updating the numbers at one time. So that's all been updated at this point. Sources, uses, balance, it's meeting all of the debt service coverage ratio on the underwriting with the proposed debt. The underwriting itself, it conforms with the exception of the bridge loan test too, but the taxes and bonds minimum meet the 50% bond test to generate the 4% credits. We do want to have a bridge loan test discussion at the next credit committee, and we have taken a look at that. As well as looking at the preservation of this deal, we went back through the capital needs assessment that has been updated since we had originally talked about it. The design and construction team has looked at it. It has conformance with our guidelines as outlined in our developer's handbook. The construction cost breakdown is reviewed to ensure it was adequate to cover group scope of work, and there was a positive reserve analysis validating the work that needs to be done. We went through, we checked all the expected useful life of major systems were evaluated. It is nearing 17 years old, so there were items like appliances and such that basically were deferred that are past their expected useful life. There are a few items that would have not hit their expected useful life, but they're going to hit it in the term of the loan within the next 3 to 7 years, roughly, give or take. Those are being brought forward into year one because we are able to capitalize the cost now with this tax application. So within that CNA, three different plans were viewed. The scope of work is about $4.6 million, and that includes about $2,000 per unit for the initial reserve and another $350 per unit on the deposit. So by utilizing the economies of scale, the contractor is able to clear all the capital work needed in year one at this time. So we have gone through, looked at the preservation, comfortable with the scope of work, comfortable with the underwriting, and so we request firm approval of the $7.4 million in tax-exempt financing, again, of which that 2.4 will remain of tax-exempt permanent debt for Sweetbriar. So I'm happy to answer any questions or go through any of that.
Do I have a motion?
So moved. This is Rob.
Second?
Second, Kevin Orr.
Discussion? Kevin?
We did have a robust discussion previously, and thank you, staff, for providing all of that data and analysis so that we could have that robust discussion. I had voiced concerns at a previous board meeting about the level of renovation for something that's only 17 years old and, frankly, looks very attractive today. It's been well maintained. And also about the level of rollover debt, and you've provided the CNA that provided supports this transaction. I understand it will be it's not simply being forgiven, it's being rolled over, and 50% of surplus cash will go towards that repayment as well, the new soft debt that we're putting on it. So it's not a super efficient program because the tax credit program is a little chunky in a way, but I think it's, you know, I support it.
It's been a good discussion. I want to thank the team at Rhode Island Housing for pushing this and pursuing the appraisal issue as well to the benefit of some of the debt. I want to thank the development team and the consultant too for answering all our questions and taking our concerns seriously. So. Other comments or questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Firm approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and financing for Penny Lane and Warren.
This is Melanie Brewer. So this request for action is for firm approval of the reservation of up to $1.2 million of 2025 or 2026 9% low-income housing tax credit. Firm approval of a taxable leasehold first mortgage loan and the amount not to exceed $1,975,000 and a housing production fund loan and amount up to $1,097,392 for Penny Lane. This is a 9% LIHTC transaction located in Warren, Rhode Island. The developer on this is also East Bay CDC. Our consultant, Frank Spinell, is here in support of the project, and he's been a really good partner with us working on this. So this development is utilizing, again, the same traditional neighborhood design similar to Sweetbriar, with closely spaced houses connected by a pedestrian-friendly streetscape and green spaces. It's going to be 40 units. It's a mix of 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, all below 60% area median income. Two of the units will be accessible, and the project will meet the ENERGY STAR and Tier 2 energy efficiency requirements. There have been some changes since preliminary approval, so I'm just going to walk through those. The state LIHTC award has increased a little over $2.6 million. Therefore, the HPS loan amount, we decreased it since preliminary by about $1.6 million accordingly. The total development cost did increase about $225,000. Although the developer was able to work with the general contractor to hold the pricing since preliminary on the construction, the cost increase was primarily from the federal financing bank on the FFB risk sharing program. So the unit mix, we did have good news. We were able to have that change. So originally there were more one-bedroom units than twos and threes. We've been able to increase the 3 bedrooms by 3 units and add an additional 2 bedroom, decreasing the 1 bedroom units in the deal. There were also originally 8 project-based voucher units. However, it was discovered going into this that the Warren Housing Authority did not have those during our due diligence process. So we had to remove them from the underwriting. In doing so, we luckily still had the HPS that was able to help cover that, keeping those units at 30% AMI. Good news is that on Monday, Warren Housing Authority unanimously approved the HAP for this. However, we don't have any documentation for it yet, so we have not been able to put it back in, but we will, once we have that documentation, the HPF will be adjusted accordingly. That only other kind of change that you've seen is the tax credit pricing decreased slightly on this deal from 92 cents to 90 cents, but Redstone is an indicator. The state LIHTC purchaser is the finance. The state tax credit pricing is at 74 cents per credit. And then for the underwriting, the project conforms with all of our underwriting standards for Rhode Island Housing. So at this time, we request of the reservation of up to $1.2 million in the low-income housing tax credit, firm approval of the taxable leasehold first mortgage for $1.9 million, and a housing production fund loan if not up to a little over $1 million. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do you have a motion?
So moved. Kevin Orr.
Second.
Second, Rebecca.
Discussion?
Yes. This is a difficult area of Rhode Island to do business in. The executive director at East Bay CDC, Diane Medeiros, and Frank Spinella have done an incredible job working with communities to get them to embrace affordable housing, and they did it years ago in Barrington with a different executive director, but going into Warren, this is a great opportunity to create affordable housing for families. So congratulations to Frank and Diane for their work in expanding the footprint in this year.
I wanted to note that the increase of the 3 bedrooms in county housing. Oh, my God, that's a huge unit. You have a son and a daughter.
Yep.
You need a 3-bedroom.
Yep.
So really valuable.
Good spot. System, great for kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And getting the rental subsidies from the housing authority, having to rely on HPF, which we never know what's going to happen with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, great news. Anyone else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That any other business? Seeing none, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Rebecca.
Second, Ron.
All in favor?
Aye.